central government institution. As Patterson increasingly became a liability to his institution, the school trustees were repeatedly pressed by lead industry officials to shut him up or let him go. According to Jamie Lincoln Kitman, writing in The Nation in 2000, Ethyl executives allegedly offered to endow a chair at Caltech if Patterson was sent packing. Absurdly, he was excluded from a 1971 National Research Council panel appointed to investigate the dangers of atmospheric lead poisoning, even though he was by now unquestionably the leading expert on atmospheric lead. To his credit, Patterson never wavered or buckled. Eventually, his efforts led to the introduction of the Clean Air Act of 1970, and finally to the removal from sale of all leaded gasoline in the United States in 1986. Almost immediately, lead levels in the blood of Americans fell by 80%. But because lead is forever, those of us alive today have about 625 times more lead in our blood than people did a century ago. The amount of lead in the atmosphere also continues to grow, quite legally, by about 100,000 metric tons a year, mostly from mining, smelting, and industrial activities. The United States also banned lead in indoor paint, 44 years after most of Europe, as McGrane notes. Remarkably, considering its startling toxicity, lead solder was not removed from American food containers until 1993. As for the Ethyl Corporation, it's still going strong, though GM, Standard Oil, and DuPont no longer have stakes in the company. They sold out to a company called Albemarle Paper in 1962. According to McGrane, as late as February 2001, Ethyl continued to contend that research has failed to show that leaded gasoline poses a threat to human health or the environment. On its website, a history of the company makes no mention of lead, or indeed of Thomas Midgley, but simply refers to the original product as containing a certain combination of chemicals. Ethyl no longer makes leaded gasoline, although according to its 2001 company accounts, tetraethyl lead, or TEL as it calls it, still accounted for $25.1 million in sales in 2000, out of overall sales of $795 million, up from $24.1 million in 1999, but down from $117 million in 1998. In its report, the company stated its determination to maximize the cash generated by TEL as its usage continues to phase down around the world. Ethyl markets TEL through an agreement with Associated Octel of England. As for the other scourge left to us by Thomas Midgley, chlorofluorocarbons, they were banned in 1974 in the United States, but they are tenacious little devils, and any that you loosed into the atmosphere before then, in your deodorants or hairsprays for instance, will almost certainly be around and devouring ozone long after you have shuffled off. Worse, we are still introducing huge amounts of CFCs into the atmosphere every year. According to Wayne Biddle, 60 million pounds of the stuff, worth $1.5 billion, still finds its way onto the market every year. So who is making it? We are. That is to say, many of our large corporations are still making it at their plants overseas. It will not be banned in third world countries until 2010. Claire Patterson died in 1995. He didn't win a Nobel Prize for his work. Geologists never do. Nor, more puzzlingly, did he gain any fame or even much attention from half a century of consistent and increasingly selfless achievement. A good case could be made that he was the most influential geologist of the 20th century. Yet who has ever heard of Claire Patterson? Most geology textbooks don't mention him. Two recent popular books on the history of the dating of Earth actually managed to misspell his name. In early 2001, a reviewer of one of these books in the journal Nature made the additional, rather astounding error of thinking Patterson was a woman. At all events, thanks to the work of Claire Patterson, by 1953, the Earth at last had an age everyone could agree on. The only problem now was it was older than the universe that contained it. 11. Muster Marx Quarks. In 1911, a British scientist named C.T.R. Wilson was studying cloud formations by tramping regularly to the summit of Ben Nevis, a famously damp Scottish mountain, when it occurred to him that there must be an easier way to study clouds. Back in the Cavendish lab in Cambridge, he built an artificial cloud chamber, a simple device in which he could cool and moisten the air, creating a reasonable model of a cloud in laboratory conditions. The device worked very well, but had an additional unexpected benefit. When he accelerated an alpha particle through the chamber to seed his make-believe clouds, it left a visible trail, like the contrails of a passing airliner. He had just invented the particle detector. It provided convincing evidence that subatomic particles did indeed exist. Eventually, two other Cavendish scientists invented a more powerful proton beam device, while in California, Ernest Lawrence at Berkeley produced his famous and impressive cyclotron, or atom smasher, as such devices were long excitingly known. All of these contraptions worked, and indeed still work, on more or less the same principle. The idea being to accelerate a proton or other charged particle to an extremely high speed along a track, sometimes circular, sometimes linear, then bang it into another particle and see what flies off. That's why they were called atom smashers. It wasn't science at its subtlest, but it was generally effective. As physicists built bigger and more ambitious machines, they began to find or postulate particles or particle families seemingly without number. Muons, pions, hyperons, mesons, k-mesons, Higgs bosons, intermediate vector bosons, baryons, tachyons. Even physicists began to grow a little uncomfortable. "Young man," Enrico Fermi replied when a student asked him the name of a particular particle, "if I could remember the names of these particles, I would have become a botanist."
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.